Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
I'm on an Einstein kick. I'm in the strange position of understanding little to nothing of the science he loved, but cherishing the insights about life on Earth that he gleaned from that science. My quote of the week is his: "The most important decision we make is whether we believe we live in a friendly or hostile universe." It's a koan, a puzzle. Here's my conclusion. Whether or not the universe is friendly is up to us. Einstein is inviting us to believe what we will and to understand that everything comes from that choice and will inform absolutely everything else. What can make the universe feel a lot friendlier is really understanding that the nature of life on Earth is that everything is always changing. We want the bad stuff to stop and the good stuff to last forever, but that is just not how it works. And when we stop wrestling with what is, when we really accept that the pain of change is inevitable, we can turn our attention to cultivating compassion for ourselves and one another and making wise responses to what lies before us. This is the second of the Buddha's Four Noble Truths. To cling is to suffer. An old Zen teaching tale tells of two monks, one older, one younger, traveling together to a neighboring temple. They come to the banks of a creek with a strong current, and a young, beautiful woman is standing at the edge. She asks if they would help her cross to the other side. Gallantly, the older monk lifts the woman onto his back and carries her across the creek. He sets her down, they bow goodbye, and the monks continue on their journey. An hour passes in silence and without a word between the monks, and then another hour and another, and finally, the younger monk can't contain himself 1 minute longer. "As monks," he says, "we are not permitted to touch a woman. How then could you carry that woman on your back?" And the older monk replies, "Brother, I set that woman down many miles ago. Why are you still carrying her?" To cling is to suffer. St. John of the Cross prayed, "Lord, spare me visions." This wasn't just a prayer to live life on life's terms. The temptation of visions of a sweet and spiritually elevated life is mighty. But wanting things to be different only adds suffering to pain. Pain, says Buddhist teacher Sylvia Boorstein, is inevitable. But suffering is optional. Sylvia once told me that she found it entirely probable that enlightenment was marked by being able to say in any moment, "Well, this isn't what I want, but it's what is. So, okay." If that's enlightenment, some days it feels a long way off. But we can aspire to that, okay. To cling is to suffer. What the Buddha was talking about was learning to let go, especially facing each hard thing with the willingness not to attach ourselves to it, but to let the pain be, to give it its due, and let it go. Sylvia Borstein had a friend named Rana, whose grandmother feuded with her daughter, Rana's mother, for 30 years. They didn't speak. And when her grandmother was very old, her memory waning, she asked Rana, "Do you remember why I'm angry with your mother?" Rana did remember, but decided not to give it air. "Do you remember?" she asked her grandmother. "No, I don't remember," she said, "but I remember I'm angry." To cling is to suffer. Years ago, American Tibetan Lama Suryadas gave me a chapter of a book he was working on about suffering and the end of suffering. He didn't use the words craving, fixation, or attachment. He went right to the source and used the word tanha. Tanha, it's a Pali word, that ancient Burmese language spoken by the Buddha, and it is translated as overweening thirst. Tanha, a pernicious cycle of demanding, resisting, clinging. I love it because the idea that all our suffering begins with unquenchable thirst is so visceral. It's so accessible. Surya explained that not clinging doesn't mean indifference or complacency. It means being more even-handed and centered and seeing the big picture, having more perspective. He writes, "We all like some things and don't like others. We could benefit from cultivating more detachment so to be less invested in personal preferences, leaving room for inner peace and balance. We may still have subjective preferences, but don't necessarily have a drama queen tantrum when things don't work out as we would have liked." He continues, "Let's talk about relinquishing attachment in the positive sense, transferring our attachment to higher, deeper, more meaningful and enduring goals, values, purposes. Letting go and being more accepting, spacious and gracious, open hands, open heart, open mind actually works," he says. "This more equanimous, generous, collaborative approach goes a long way toward relieving a lot of the tension, stress and friction that generates the energy of conflict and confusion. The universe feels friendlier." All of us are faced with navigating that razor's edge between apathy and clinging, that which divides indifference from passion. So how do we do it? Psychologist Eileen Strauss-Cohen writes, "As humans, we're pre-programmed to avoid danger or anyone who has proven untrustworthy and to remember negative experiences so that we can prevent them. So letting go of a bad experience or forgiving someone who harmed us goes against our instincts. More often than not, it is wise to listen to our instincts. But if they're keeping us trapped in a place that doesn't allow us to escape our suffering, we can choose to let go." Dr. David Hawkins wrote the book Letting Go, The Pathway of Surrender. The big picture of letting go, he says, involves being aware of a feeling, letting it come up, staying with it, and letting it run its course without wanting to make it different or do anything about it. As I read his words, his guidance, I'm going to invite you to call to mind something you'd like to let go. Maybe start with something relatively easy. A parking ticket, someone beating you to a seat on the bus. Let's try this. Call to mind your situation and just simply let the feeling be there. Allow yourself to have the feeling without resisting it, venting it, fearing it, condemning it, moralizing about it. Just drop your judgment and see that it is just a feeling. And you just be with that feeling. Surrender all your efforts to modify it in any way. let go of wanting to resist it. Resistance is what keeps the feeling going. So when we give up resisting or trying to modify the feeling, it will shift and be accompanied by a lighter sensation. A feeling that is not resisted will disappear as the energy behind it burns off. So just note your resistance and let the feeling come up. Let the reaction to having the feeling in the first place go. And as you let go, just ignore all your thoughts. Just stay focused on that feeling, not on the thoughts. The thoughts are merely rationalizations of the mind to try to explain the presence of the feelings. Thoughts are endless and self-reinforcing. They only breed more thoughts. Just stay with the feeling. Good. I promise it will change. And as you explore the possibility of freedom, as your curiosity gets the best of you, you will notice that tanha, that thirst, dissipating. Dr. Hawkins believes that all negative feelings are associated with fear. Fear of the survival of our ego. So maybe we let go of something and it comes back. That's okay. It just means there's more to surrender. Rilke says, just keep going. No feeling is final. When we unhook, we can feel ourselves breathing more easily. Hawkins writes, by continuously letting go, it is possible to stay in that state of freedom. Feelings come and go, and eventually we stop identifying with them. Perhaps we thought we were the victim of our feelings, or we thought they were necessary for our survival, but they are not. We are not, and they are not. In his book, Food for the Heart, the great Thai forest monk and teacher Achan Cha paints a grim picture of the decision not to let go. He likens it to weighing ourselves down with a heavy rock and carrying it with us wherever we go. Eventually, we've carried it for so long, it's become a part of us. We can't imagine laying it down. The idea is frightening or unimaginable. But to be truly free, we have to lay down the rock, set down the woman. As you well know, my mother Kay was a difficult person. For many, many years before she moved to memory care, Kam and I lived 3 miles away from her and increasingly helped her to stay in her home. Our friends couldn't believe it. After so much terrible behavior, how could we possibly become her caregivers? Kem did it because she's a saint. I did it because, given the choice between bitterness and letting go, I chose freedom. I also did it because on a meditation retreat, I experienced a profound insight. This was at the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies here in Massachusetts, and I'll bring you there now. On the first evening, 75 of us take a vow of silence. Additionally, we vow not to read, write, or look at one another. Next, we memorize the 4 lines that so many of you now have memorized as well, a 2,500-year-old gift from the Buddha, in direct translation from his teachings on loving kindness. May you be free of danger. May you have mental happiness. May you have physical happiness. May you have ease of well-being. And then we begin repeating the phrases in our minds over and over and over. May I, may you, may they, may we, may all beings have ease of well-being. We are told that a Tibetan nun imprisoned by the Chinese government survived torture and solitary confinement on the knowledge that somewhere in the world, in every moment, someone was saying metta, saying the loving kindness phrases for her and for her jailers. I'm all in. 6 solid days of loving kindness meditation. The first wake-up gong sounds at 5:15. Seated meditation begins at 5:45, and at 6:30, it's time for breakfast. Breakfast is followed by an hour of walking meditation. And then it's back to sitting, punctuated only by light meals, a 1-hour talk by one of the retreat leaders each evening, and a 2-hour work period for which my assignment is to help wash the lunch dishes. Day after day is just this, all in silence. Seated meditation, walking meditation, seated meditation until the final evening sitting ends at 10. And the metta phrases, over and over and over, may you be free of danger. May you have mental happiness. May you have physical happiness. May you have ease of well-being. On the second morning, we've been meditating for perhaps 2 hours when we're instructed to choose a living benefactor, a teacher for whom we feel gratitude, and to say metta for them, sending our loving kindness. Unbidden, my mother, still living then, surfaces in my quiet mind. She gave me life. She has been a soul-crushing teacher for my beloved younger sister and me. I'm sitting on my meditation cushion absolutely still, and my mind is lit up like a Christmas tree. Do I really want to spend the entire day with whatever might come up about my mother? No, no, no. Yes. If I'm really going to make something of this retreat, if I'm really going to experience something transformative and wake up, is there any other living benefactor whom I might invoke at this time? Yes, yes, yes. No. My mother had grand mal epilepsy. Sitting there in the early morning light with my yes, no, hanging in the wintry air of the meditation hall, the woman behind me fell to the floor with a familiar thud, a seizure. And as half a dozen of us leave our cushions to help, my heart is pierced with a visceral understanding of the kind of raw fear that consumed my mother when she sees there was no one there to help her but a child. I am flooded with a profound sense of compassion, an opening to the possibility of laying down my sadness, my anger, my shame, my guilt, laying the burden down and letting go. And when I return to my cushion, my mind is clear and focused. Over and over, I repeat the loving kindness phrases for my mother. May you be free of danger. May you have mental happiness. May you have physical happiness. May you have ease of well-being. In place of thirst, freedom. Beloved spiritual companions, it is entirely possible that the most important decision we make is whether or not we live in a friendly or hostile universe. To thirst, to cling, is to suffer. And here on the razor's edge, dividing indifference from passion, we can choose not to add suffering to pain. May we put down the woman. May we lay the burden down. May we be free. And now for a benediction, I invite you to put your hands over your hearts in namaste. I bow to the divine in you. Adapted from Canadian singer-songwriter Farron. By our lives, we are spirit. By our hearts, we are a people. By our eyes, we are open. And by our hands, we are whole. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Bless your hearts. I love you. Amen.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.